part of being committed to or something.
What do you want to do?
Yeah. I'd like to say good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name's Matt. I'm an addict.
An alcoholic. Whatever. Before I start, I really want to thank the committee for asking me to do this, and I want to thank everybody who had any kind of part in putting this convention on. I had a wonderful time myself, and I just want to say thank you very much. So, yeah, I'm an addict, an alcoholic. Anybody know what the difference is between an addict and an alcoholic? You can see from the back, a couple sugar packets, right? Alcoholic does that. Drug addict. You can relate to that, you're in the right place. my really good buddy Donnie, he's one of my oldest friends in the world, been clean and sober around a decade now, told me that joke, and I'm like a lot of other people, I get, you know, terrified coming out to do this no matter what, and found a little humor always kind of helps me relax. It's really an honor and a privilege to be here this morning. It's another Sunday morning, you know, and I'm not trying to stave off what I did Friday night and Saturday night. I woke up this morning. Actually, the birds woke me up, and they kind of pissed me off for a little while. When you're an addict like me, you know all about the birds pissing you off first thing in the morning. So I was remembering what I heard somebody else talking about this weekend, and 11-step workshop about the beauty of being able to hear some birds and that kind of thing. And I think it was the 11-step workshop. Might have been Jim last night. I'm not sure. I'm pretty tired, but I woke up feeling good. And it's 10 a.m. and before I got here, I would have been running for a couple of hours already. And deeply grateful to have to not have to go through this stuff that I just have to go through to just get out of bed this morning. I want to say that I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in the program of action that it so clearly outlines. It's changed my life. It's changed me as a human being. And I'm continuously amazed that an old sod in New York stock speculator and a proctologist were able to put this thing together, you know. And that's just amazing to me. It's an honor to stand before you as an addict, somebody who's recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I don't say that because like I'm all that in a bag of chips. I say that because that's what this program has to offer. And very happy that I have a place to come to on a daily basis and take care of myself and try and carry the message to the addict who's still suffering. I'm also glad that I have a format to follow and what it was like because, and then what happened and what it's like now because, you know, those early founders found that that's the way to gain somebody who's new or nearly new how to gain their trust. And I'm hoping that some of the people that were here last night who are new or nearly new are here again this morning. And that you went to bed sober and you haven't gotten loaded yet this morning. I always hate talking to people like 20 years and saying, you know, go to meetings, work the steps, get a sponsor, read the book. It really works, you know. It still seems like I'm preaching to the choir, but you know, we have a tradition around here, the fifth one, that I have a primary purpose, and that's to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And my experience has been, for the most part, those people that are new, but sometimes it's people that have been around for a long time. If you're an addict like me, sometimes you have a mind that just forgets everything. I've got this forever clever mind, and it's like a steel colander, and stuff just goes right through it all the time, you know. And drugs work the same way. They always wore off, and I was left to myself, and I found that recovery will wear off. So I need to do this thing daily. And I'm grateful that it works that way. I was born in Brooklyn, and I'll prove it. Hey, fuck you. I grew up in a family that gave me all the love I could ever want, all the support I could ever want. I never went without, and I'm deeply grateful for that. You know, my folks flew out here, and there was a point a few years ago where they had to make that difficult decision of saying, you know, we love you, but you have to go. You can't be here. You have to go live back on the streets where you just were. And it really moves me a lot, and it speaks of what this program has to offer. I believe that they flew all the way out from New York just to, you know, say I love you and spend a little time, and I'm really grateful for that. I love you guys. Thank you. So I had all this love, and I had all this support, and none of it ever really quite sunk all the way in. You know, I've just been listening to people speak all weekend and just relating across the board. I never really quite felt all the way comfortable inside of myself doing what I was doing wherever I was doing it. Had those feelings like I never ever quite fit in. I could never really match up to you. And the one that I didn't really know until I got here and I started doing some of the work was that, you know, if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. And I could never, ever quite put a finger on any of these feelings other than I just didn't feel right. And I'm so glad that I got here and I did, you know, and I continued to do some of the work to be able to identify some of this stuff. I never had, you know, the thing of like, you know, I just don't feel adequate, you know, pass me that joint, you know. It was never a conscious thing. It was like, I got loaded because this shit felt good, all right? That's all I knew, man. It was like, this feels good, I'm going to do it some more. I was a big believer in the bathroom. Favorite room in the house, you know. And I would be, long before I even started getting loaded, I would go in the bathroom, use the bathroom, and I'd pick up a book and start reading, and I'd sit in there for 3 or 4 hours and just read, you know. And my mom would be like, are you all right, you know? And I'm sure she was doing some, she thought I was doing something else in there other than reading, but wrong fellowship for that. But you know, I loved like that, like quiet, like I'm all alone in here and no one can really like mess with what I'm trying to do to change the way I feel. Folks were my first real big escape. But nothing quite worked like that first beer that I drank. I don't know exactly why I drank it. Today I have like some hunches, you know, uncomfortable as a kid, teased by other kids, didn't want to be a kid, saw adults sitting around drinking, smoking a pot and laughing and having a good time. And I liked to hang out with them when that was going on because, it was like, it was fun. And so, you know, the devious mind that I have, you know, I waited and I plotted and I planned and it took a couple of years, but I finally got my opportunity and I stole a beer out of the fridge. I think it was something really quality, like a Black Label, you know, some really good stuff there. And I snuck in the bathroom. It's my first experience of being in bathrooms for a long time. After that, I drank it, and I got off. That thing that that makes me different from normal people happened. Felt good. Felt really good. And all those like weird little childhood feelings of just like, this kind of sucks, went away. And I got off, man, and I loved it like pretty much immediately. And I kind of stumbled around the house, and this little euphoric buzz, and then that wore off, and I puked my guts out. And because I have this disease, I noted at the time, I went back and I got another one immediately. And it just kicked off this long 20-year run. First illegal drug I ever did was LSD. I was 9. And today, like, I'll look at 9-year-old kids and be like, what the hell was I thinking, man? You know, I'm like, dude, you know? Yes, I moved out of California. I say dude now sometimes, so that you might hear that said once or twice. But man, I had a great time. I spent all day tripping my ass off hanging out with my grandpa. kind of old, stoned out alcoholic guy, and he was just sitting there all kind of buzzed out, and I'm laying on the floor watching it melt all buzzed out, and I didn't know it then, but these were hits that were supposed to be split between four people. Oh, I felt that shudder. I've heard other people talk about that, you know, and just, you know, I didn't know, so I'll take this, sure. You know, my oldest friend Donnie stole it from my dad, and we decided to take it, and I loved it. Closest thing I found to a spiritual experience before I got here. Later that night, I took the second hit. I'm 9 years old, and I'm running around on, like, I guess the equivalent of what, like, eight people should have been taking. And there are no consequences. I didn't get caught. I loved it. And started smoking pot pretty much right after that. I'd heard drugs were bad, but my experience was nothing bad happened. This feels good, and I want to keep doing this for a long time. Smoked pot pretty much every day for 20 years. Started getting into, taking pills, and I liked things that made me go down primarily. My grandmother was dying of lung cancer and was living with us, and she died, and they were giving her morphine and liquid morphine, and I went in the bathroom and stole the bottle and drank a little bit, and that was the best thing I'd ever found. And I was not like one guy who I totally do not relate to the concept of drug of choice. I never even heard that term before I walked into a treatment center, and I looked at the woman who asked me that like blankly, and like, what the hell is that? I was a mixer. I like to put about 4, 5, 6, 7 different things in my body at once and see what happened. That was the way that I drank and I used. So I got into pills. I was a medicine cabinet bandit. I had the coffin flush down to a science. Go visit somebody. You know, can I use your bathroom? You know, go on there and and open the medicine cabinet, you know, and rifle around and like, may cause drowsiness? All right. Yeah. Do not take with alcohol? Oh, yeah, right. You know I'm going to be doing some of that. And not just take shit and find out what happened later. You know, took all kinds of things that I probably shouldn't have been taking and like that, you know. And so I'd finish, you know, rummaging through and take some of this, some of that, and put it all back very carefully. So, you know, in case they open it up, you know, it was all in the exact same spot. And flush the toilet to close the door. So there'd be no noise. And I did that a lot. I was first stop I made in somebody's house. Okay, I used the bathroom. And went on and on like that. Big believer in psychedelic drugs for a long time. Took an awful lot of them. It was not uncommon for me to wake up and like take 5 hits of liquid acid and smoke a joint just to get to the bus stop to get to school. And it's you learn some survival skills trying to like pay attention in homeroom while you're coming on to that shit. You know, sitting there and the professor's lecturing with a meter stick or something. You know, I'm just wow, man. You know, are you present? Barely. You know, that kind of thing. Did my first line of cocaine in the bathroom of high school. A really good friend of mine, Chris, who got tragically killed many years later, went out of there and went into gym class. And darn near pulled a Len Bias on myself playing basketball. I was so amped up, I was like practically passing the ball and running and catching it myself. I was gone, man. I was like, this is great. But it was like this, you know, really expensive thing and hard to get. And, you know, it was like an every once in a while kind of thing. And by the way, I do not identify myself as a cocaine addict because my personal belief is that, like, maybe somebody who's new might go like, oh, well, then, like, I can shoot a little heroin. You know what I mean? I'm a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. The thing that I love about CA is that when I got here, they said, we don't care whatever it is you're doing. We want to help with your problem. The freedom from all mind-altering substances is very appealing to me. And I love Cocaine Anonymous for that, and the people that welcomed me when I first showed up in the rooms, because they were like, we don't care, bro. We don't care whatever it is you're doing, whatever it is you were killing yourself with. We have a solution to that. Just sit your ass down and pay attention. So cocaine was not a real big, easily accessible thing. There was tons of pot and tons of acid and all kinds of pills, because everybody has a bathroom. And I did that for a long time, and it all kind of culminated with getting poison on something I thought was some kind of psychedelic drug, and being running around the house naked and riding on the walls, and my folks having to literally hold me down on the floor and like literally sit on my back and that kind of thing, because I was out of my mind, literally. I couldn't speak. I was just grunting and saying weird words, and it was a scary thing. And so I figured that acid's a problem, and but I can drink, smoke pot, and I did that for the last couple of years of high school, and somehow I got into college, because high school is all about being high. That's all it was for me. And I'm a drug addict. I'm really smart, even though I've done some really stupid shit in my life. I'm really smart, and I know how to play the game. My whole thing is, if I'm interested in it, I'm gonna do really well. And if I'm not interested in it, I will do just what I can to get by. And that was the way that, it was my coping mechanism. My life coping skills in high school were Visine, Dentine, and cologne. that's what I needed to get through each day, man. You know what I mean? It was like, get the red out and take the reek off and chew some gum, man. That's how I survived, trying to sell a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and hooking up friends and making all of my friends, because I always had a bag of pot. That was how I earned my friends. By the time I graduated from high school, it was my seventh overall school, my second high school. So every 2 years I had to move. And what I found was, as soon as I got to the new school, there were certain people I could, just like us, I can spot us sober a mile away, and I could spot us loaded a mile away. Walk up and, they got the big boots and the torn Levi's and the bandanas around the leg and all that, David Lee Roth crap, and, the leather jacket and smoking. I'm like, there's my people. Hey, you get high? Yeah, I get high. Best of friends immediately. We had something in common. That was just how I related. I related by getting loaded with people. So I moved out to Santa Cruz, California to go to this wonderful university there. And I moved out there in 1987, and I finished my bachelor's degree in 2001. Now, that doesn't sound like one of our stories. I went through 5 years, and I was in a class and a half away from graduating, and could not get it together for all of those years. And college was great. I did all those things that a college student is supposed to do, like snort speed and study. Crank, there's a nasty drug, right? Burn a hole in your head, tears running down my face, and then what the hell did I just do? Snort battery acid, and then it would hit me, and this is great for the first day, and 4 days later, when everybody's a cop, it wasn't so much fun, they're out there, and they're looking in, and here they come, and all that, how can I make this stop? Did all the keg parties, and I used to have this sticker that said, "My parents think I'm in college." And that's what I did. I ran around the redwoods, and I got loaded. And the progressive nature of this disease was really starting to come on. I didn't know it at the time. I know it today. I thought I had a set of tolerance. That was my word for it back then. I've got tolerance. See, I can party more than you, and I can drink more than you, and I can function better than you. I'm the guy at 5 minutes at 2 a.m. who's got enough together to walk into 7-Eleven and deal with those lights. I can handle that. I drive better when I'm drunk. If I'm not drunk and shit, I'm all, oh my god, I have a few drinks, I'm like, whoa. Just kind of take the edge off. I'm a better driver this way, and I can deal. And I took great pride in being able to, like, out-party people. Some male ego thing going on there. And I did all that stuff that, you know, I had to do to feel normal. But looking back on it now, I can really see how, like, you know, those first, like, two beers when I was 9 was not what I needed to get the desired effect when I was 20. And that it was the way this disease works really blows my mind, because it's so sneaky and it's so subtle, and it crept into my life and just started taking a hold of all these things that I like to do, like make art, like play sports, like cook food, like go dancing, all those things. It just kind of stole it all the way, but so subtly. I actually thought I was making a decision to not go do these things anymore. A pattern was like, this is fun, and then take some drugs or drink and say, like, wow, this is even better. And then after a while, I was like, well, it's not going to be fun unless I have this stuff to go do that. And then I was like, well, I need to get this stuff in me just so I can even think about going and doing that. And, like, why bother doing that? That's too expensive. I'll just sit at home and have a party by myself. Not a bar drinker, costs too much. Drink of choice was like, what's on sale? You know, not particularly picky. And that's the way that I went through those 5 years of a wonderful opportunity to really improve myself and develop my mind. So I got out, Lodi graduated, and went on this long series of one job being slightly lamer than the next, pretty much. And I did this and I did that, and I moved around and I tried to, you know, pull off, you know, this dream that I had of being able to drink and use the way I wanted to use, and still kind of come up in life. I would see people with, like, new cars and mountain bikes on them and boats on them. I'd be like, wow, how do they do that? You know, how do they pull this thing off? I'd watch friends get married and buy houses, and I would just scratch my head and I couldn't figure it out. So this went on and on and on, you know, just, you know, taking as much as I could whenever I could every single day, and just existing, like I heard somebody else talk about. Didn't really have much of a life. Everybody I hung out with did what I did, or else I thought, you know, people that didn't were lame. My life, I started to kind of get a glimpse that I wasn't really progressing, so I was noticing, like, the houses and the places that I lived a few years earlier were a lot nastier these days, you know. And I'm living in these places, I'm looking at, like, this place is a dump, you know. And my life is kind of slowly going downhill, but I really can't quite see. I can't figure out what the problem is. I'm thinking that my main problem is I'm just not earning enough money. And that's, you know, if I can just get enough money, then I can afford all this stuff I like to do, and I can buy all that shit, you know. And so it just started falling apart, and I started, you know, figuring that the town I was living in was the problem, and I would start moving around. And I would move and hang out somewhere, and I'd end up with myself again doing what I needed to do, and it would fall apart up there, and I would just pretty much run my life into the ground and then go home for the holidays and recuperate for a little while, eat a bunch and sleep and bathe and that kind of thing, and kind of like, all right, I'm feeling a bit better, and I can go back out and try this, what I now understand to be a desperate experiment all over again. And every year it just seemed like a notch would go, I would just drop a notch, and, like, worse things would happen. I'm like, you know, long-standing joke when I first showed up, it's like, I just thought my life was in a slump. Anybody have that feeling? I'm like, you know, I'm just in a bad spell. This is going to pull out. It's going to be fun again, you know. And it didn't end up happening until I got sober, but it was starting to go downhill, and I ended up, you know, I had back up a little bit. When I was in high school and I first started getting into drugs, I needed to educate myself, right? I'm a smart dude, and I wanted to know what the hell I was taking, where I came from, what it did to me, and so I read every available piece of literature I could, and this is all stemming from reading Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I read that book, man. I read that back page of all that shit that those guys running around carrying, And I went, yeah, that's what I want to do. And I don't think normal people read that book and have that, like, yeah, you know, I want to run around with enough shit to kill 30 people at all times, you know. So I was using like that and going on like this, and I had tried pretty much everything I could possibly find to get my hands on, and things that I couldn't find I looked for, and I did all that stuff. And I had always swore that I'd never do heroin and I'd never stick a needle in my arm. Swore it, deathly afraid. You see where this is going, right? Means I'm going to be getting sober pretty soon. You'd be talking about, like, picking up the pipe, and you're like, cool, here comes recovery, you know. A friend said, hey, I'm going to get some heroin. I went, cool. I like to snort a little bit of that. And so I was just going to try it. Here is my forever clever mind. I'm just going to try it once to say I've tried that. A month later, I'm still trying it. And I'm looking at my friend who's shooting it, and he's shooting this little teeny thing, and I'm snorting this big old thing, and I'm just not getting off the way he is. But another absolute, just stellar, brilliant, fine-tuned state of mind thought process is, I know, I'll save money if I start shooting heroin. That was honestly my thought. I can remember that thought, you know, clear as a bell today. And it took me like 6 years to get that needle out of my arm. Like I heard somebody else say last night, I really wanted to stop. Within a year, I wanted to stop with all of my might, and I absolutely could not. And that just reinforced, what a piece of crap that I am, and what a loser, and I'll never amount to anything. And like, you can do all these things, you can't even stop doing this. You know, you're just so lame, and all that. Just shame and that stuff. It just weighed so heavy on me, and. Then I really started getting into things that caused me a lot of guilt. And guilt was like starting to pile up really heavily. I'm spending all this money just trying, at this point, just to not be sick. And I made another career choice, my forever clever mind. And said, you know what? I'm going to start camping. I'm going to save some money. I don't have to pay rent. I'm going to start camping. And being somebody who's done like a lot of mountaineering and backpacking and that kind of thing, I had all the gear, right? So I'm like, cool, you know, I'll come up in the world, do this for a couple of months. That did not happen for me. My life went downhill really fast because all of a sudden I had some extra cash in my wallet. I didn't have to go for bills or rent or that kind of thing. And I migrated to the middle of a blackberry bush, which I lived in for quite, I was like Brer Rabbit, you know, this big old thorn bush, and I lived in there. That was my little spot. And I forgot skills like eating. You gotta be pretty loaded to forget to like eat, you know. I never drank water, so it's like, there's water and beer. I didn't brush my teeth. I didn't get a haircut, and I didn't brush it. I certainly didn't bathe. My idea of laundry was wearing clothes and using somebody's hose in their backyard. And I'm losing weight fast, and I'm looking worse and worse. And my friends I used to, like, you know, have a good time with, you know, the thing was going on, like, what's wrong with Max? What's going on with him? And then I started that thing I love the Big Book talks about so clearly, is that leading that double life. Doing my very best to put on a good-looking outer shell, even though I'm dying inside, just to try and fool people, so they won't know like how bad it is. And even the people that I like to get really loaded with, like I was embarrassed to tell them how I was getting loaded. And I ended up living on that bush for quite a few years. And I'd go home for the holidays and try and pull myself back together and go back and do it again. And it was getting bad fast. You know, and I was actually able to stop on many, many occasions. I could not stay stopped. I would go through 5 days of no sleeping and, you know, the diarrhea and the vomiting and all that crap. And then I would be like, well, look, you stopped. You can stop anytime you want to. You can shoot a little heroin socially on a Friday night, you know. And And that would just kick it all off again. I had no idea what I was up against. I had no idea that I had this disease, that once I start, I don't stop when I want to. It was just brutal. And I used to trip out on, like, just, you know, people that would smoke rock. I would just trip, you know, you guys would be sitting there, right, and, like, lips all blistered and swollen and cracked, and you're doing this thing, and I'm like, you guys are messed up, and I'm, you know, trying to, like, find a rig, and you guys are like, you guys are messed up, you know, and, like, I just look at you guys and couldn't relate, and that was going on, and I was really feeling loneliness. Like that chilling vapor just settled over my life. So I couldn't be around anyone, and man, I was just alone, so unbelievably, painfully alone. It crushed me. And every morning I'd wake up, I don't want to do this again today. I don't want to do this again today, but I just felt so bad, and I had this mental obsession just ruling my life that I would go and do it again, and then like, oh, you're such a loser, you did it again, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. For years and years and years, desperately trying to stop, trying everything, you know, therapy and moving and reading inspirational books and all that stuff they talk about on page 30 and 31. Man, I related to that big time. When I got here, I went, oh yeah, I'm taking a trip, not taking a trip, like absolutely, I've tried all that stuff. And finally, I ended up back in New York just trying to like pull it together one more time, and my family, you know, just intuitively knew kind of what was going on with me, and had a little mini intervention. And with my forever clever mind, I came up with my program. It drives me nuts when I hear people say, I'm working my program. You know, because my program gets me loaded. I believe in the program of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in it with all of my heart. Because that's what I found for me, my experiences. That's what's helped me stop using it and say stop one day at a time. So I have my plan. I'm going to go to a couple of meetings every once in a while. Pretty much to get everybody off my back, but I can drink, because that's okay. And I can smoke pot, because that's like green and organic and from God and shit. And I can do all that, you know. And I'm really sneaking around and trying to hide it a lot. And I can remember sitting in the back of meetings, and I am just miserable. And I'm not doing anything to change it. You know, I'm not doing any of the work. I'm not even, what I heard my first bunch of meetings, I didn't even hear it. I heard like, mwah, 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 mwah. You know, it was like Charlie Brown's parents, man. That's all I heard. You know, and I would just, you know, I'd get there, the second the meeting started, and the second it was over, I was out of there. You know, go back, and like, meeting was great, run to my room and drink a pint. You know, like, I just so did not get it. And this ended up with a second professional intervention, and I agreed to go into a treatment center, which was back in New York, and I went in there trying to be a little like star pupil. I figured, and this is why I relate to Bill's story, was that self-knowledge, knowing what's wrong with me, is going to really help me. You know, I did everything that they wanted me to do in there, except I was shooting heroin and detox. I guess they didn't want me to be doing that in there, and I was kind of doing the pill shuffle in there, and I smuggled a rig through the whole thing. What happened was there were these H and I meetings that were coming in, and they planted the seed of hope in me. I didn't really necessarily know it at the time, because, you know, oh, I haven't drank or used in 10 years. And I go, bullshit. Can't be done. No way. Look at you. Got to watch. You know, you've eaten today, it's obvious, you know, and you're far too happy. But I started to think that just maybe one of these people weren't lying. But I got out of this treatment center, they told me everything I needed to do at that time. I learned everything I needed to know how to stay sober in there. And told me to go to a meeting every single day. They told me to get a sponsor and work the steps in order as fast as I could and as honestly as I could. Told me to read the book and pray and maybe think about getting a service commitment. I did none of that. Because, you know, that guy over there in that treatment center, this guy needs a sponsor. That guy's messed up. That lady, she needs to work the steps, right? You know, but like, I've been to college. I'm a smart dude. I can figure all this out. And I would read the book. They're like, read the book, read the book, read the book. I'm like, all right, I'll read this stupid book, you know. And I open it up, and it's like, war fever ran high in this little New England town. I'm like, I'm dying here. What the hell is this, man? War fever. I'm like, oh my God, you know. I do not relate. This is not for me. This is not for me, you know. I was trying to do this thing myself. That's the problem. So I got out of there and I got loaded within an hour. Fled New York because New York was the problem. Went back to Santa Cruz because suddenly the solution had been the problem just a few months earlier. Moved back into my bush. The rats had moved out at that point because I wasn't around like with food and stuff like that. But they came back to visit. And that's when I really started to understand, because I'd had a little bit of stuff pumped in my head about the progressive nature of this disease. Was I was watching, I knew how much I was doing before I went in this first treatment center, and I could not believe how much I was doing against my will from that point on. And started breaking into houses, ripping friends off, and that's really good for your self-esteem. Doing all these awful, terrible things that I hated doing. And that from the outside it might have looked like I didn't care, but I'm an addict. I have a huge heart, and I cared, and I wanted to do the right thing. I just couldn't do it. There was this thing ruling my life and crushing me. And this went on for about, I don't know, 6-7 months. You know, the last bunch of years in there are really hazy. I mean, like, I sobered up and it was like, it's the 90s? You know, I was like, wow, what happened to, like, the 80s? You know, it's just like this big, like, blur through, like, you know, the end of the 70s and the 80s and you know, the first three quarters of the 90s. And I'm sitting in the woods. I haven't bathed in about a month, and I'm eating, I'm like, a burrito a week. And I have to wake up with, like, two needles in each arm just to not be sick. And what I needed to not feel sick at the end, and I just say this because not like I'm all badass addict or anything like that, but just so, like, maybe somebody who's new, who's, like, coming in here just crawling, to me it speaks to the power of this fellowship. Is I was doing, like, 7 grams of smack and 4 grams of coke and a fifth of booze and an eighth of weed and a big handful of tranquilizers every single day just to not feel sick. It had a long stop since about being the party. It was like, I'm just existing here, man. And all that stuff going in through my system one day, I'm sitting in the woods, and what happened was I felt something shift in my heart. I felt something move, and the feeling behind it was like the honeymoon's over. And I knew I just could not do this anymore. And what came out of my mouth was something that I had never said in the kind of desperation that I said at that time. I'd done a lot of, like, you know, foxhole prayer, God, if you get me out of this, I promise I'll never. A lot of praying to the porcelain God and that kind of thing. But this was different. This, like, came from my soul. And I went, God, please help me. Because I remembered all those people in H&I talking about they asked something greater than themselves for help. And God, please help. And this is before you guys taught me to, like, watch out what you pray for, right? Because I believe God called the cops. God, please help. And the cops showed up, you know. And not exactly what I had in mind. But and it was funny. You know, I saw him. I'm walking on these railroad tracks, and I saw him, way, a little cop, way in the distance. And he's standing there, you know, cop pose, you know. And I can see the sun hitting his badge and his belt buckle. And it was like I was in a dream. Like, I believe today that God just kind of walked me right up to this guy. And I snapped out of it when he threw me in the back of the car with the handcuffs. And all of a sudden, all those times, I was like, oh, come on, like, officer, can't you just let go? I promise I won't do it again. You know, I'm starting to renege and all that. So, sat in jail. And jail's a good place to think. My first 30 days, I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I could lay on the floor like a pile of laundry. That was about all I could do. Other than crawling into the bathroom. And I was ready to do drugs that were just going to come out of another man's asshole. You know you got a problem when, right? I'm ready to do this shit, right? Thing that put me in there, I'm ready to do. And I made a deal with myself in my heart that when I get out of this sentence, that I was going to get a sponsor and I was going to work the steps and I was going to go to a meeting every single day. And if I don't like what happened at the end of the 12-step process, I go out and I drink and I use again. I made that deal to myself, like in the core of my being. Blind faith. And I was offered the opportunity to get bailed out of jail. And even at that time, I don't know why, but I said, no, I need to sit in here. I knew myself well enough to know that if I got out real easy, that it wouldn't just be too easy, and I wouldn't pay the consequences. And I knew I needed to hurt. I knew I needed to get that stuff through my thick skull. And so I did all that, and I got out, and I got on treatment center, and once again, they told me get a sponsor and work the steps and go to meetings. And this time I did that. And my life has changed unbelievably from that point on. I hate the 90 and 90 concept too. I drank, I used every day, and I need to be hanging out with us every single day. In my first 90 days out of this treatment center, I went to probably 250 meetings. And in those 90 days, I worked all 12 steps. I feel very fortunate that I fell in with some people that hammered on me about reading the book with a sponsor. One of them's here tonight, you know, and I'd probably be dead if it weren't for that man. You know, thank you. And I fell in with a bunch of people that believed in working the steps, and they believed in working them fast and not screwing around with this thing. And I can remember my home group is the carpet cleaners. It's a men's meeting, and that meeting has been a huge, huge help to me and continues to be to this day. And I can remember sitting in that meeting and for the first time in my life admitting I didn't know how to do something and saying, you know what, I have no idea how to stay clean and sober. I have no idea how to live without putting something in my body. How do I do this? Can you guys help me? And there are about like six dudes who were just, they made recovery look so cool to me. They had their problems, so they'd come in, they'd talk about their problem 1 week, and they'd come in the next week and talk about the solution they found by working the steps around that problem. They were laughing all the time. They looked good. They dressed well. They had nice jewelry. I hated them. Hated them. I was uncomfortable. I was miserable. I wanted to get loaded every single moment of every waking day. And I believe that also speaks to the power of this fellowship and this program, is that as much as I wanted to, I learned that I didn't have to. That I didn't have to do what my brain told me to do. These guys, you know, they were like, it's so simple, bro, just hang with us, do what we do, and you will get what we have. And I wanted what they had. The whole concept of being happy, joyous, and free was pretty appealing to me. So I got busy with the steps, you know. You know, I learned that the first thing I have to do for me is know in my innermost being that I have this disease. That with that knowledge, that like in my gut feeling, that, you know, I'm never ever going to be cured of this thing. I believe that I've recovered from where I was at, but I will never ever be cured, meaning that I can never safely drink or use again for the rest of my life. How do I do that? I hang with us every day, you know. But that, I learned that was the first step in recovery. And then as long as I could, you know, fully concede to my innermost self, then I might be able to admit that I'm powerless. And that's what I did. I learned that lack of power is my problem, and that as a result, my life is unmanageable. And I've been sleeping under a bush for years and been in jail. That was not a big stretch for me to come to that, you know, realization. I did struggle with the second step, however. Now, I can tell you that I used to punch myself in the face to go to doctors to get painkillers. Normal people don't do that shit. You know, I'd stand there and look in the mirror, that's not good enough, you know, and just stand there and punch myself repeatedly to get a nice big swollen head and to go get, like, you know, some kind of pills, you know, and I'm like, I'm not insane. What are you talking about, you know? once, while taking care of two young children back in New York, I had drugs shipped to me FedEx, you know, and it positively, absolutely has to be there overnight, that kind of thing. I had it sent to me, and I didn't have a rig. So in my forever clever mind, I manufactured one. I took a Dremel, bought a basketball inflation valve, and I sharpened it up. And I'm trying to jam this thing into my arm with no veins left. And I'm responsible for like a 2-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl. That memory still kind of hurts a little bit. I'm grateful to God that nothing happened. I didn't kill myself, or I didn't overdose. But it's that kind of willingness I had to go get loaded, you know. And I'm struggling with what do you mean I'm insane? You know, I'm like, what? You know, and it was pointed out to me that it's not the stupid shit that I did out there when I was getting loaded. It's the fact that I kept believing I can get loaded successfully. I would buy that lie every single time. That was the insanity of this disease, was that there was this thing that happened in my mind, this curious mental twist that would come over, and like, you know, the 1,000 previous times that this did not work and ended horribly will be different this time. I've heard it expressed as this insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, or for me, knowing what the results are going to be and doing it anyway. That was the insanity of this disease, and that I would be restored to this sanity through a process. My understanding is that I would come to believe this thing, and I think I'm sane today, but I look on how back I was thinking 6 months ago, I was insane, but I thought I was sane then, you know, and that goes all the way down. So I'm sure, as sane as I think I am now, somewhere down in the future, I'll look back and go, dude, you're nuts, you know, but so I believe in the process. And that's pretty daily for me. I'll get a PG&E bill that'll drive me up the wall, you know, and I'll go to a meeting and be reminded that I have heat and I have a house, and it puts all my stuff back into perspective, you know, and I kind of get, you know, brought back to a good, healthy perspective on life, you know, and I believe that's a big part of sanity. And the biggest part of being sane for me is that when those thoughts occasionally still do come, is that I don't believe the lie. I know that I can't, and that I better do some other things around it, or else I will. I love the third step. I love the third step prayer. I'm a big believer in it. I learned that this is first two. I could look back on my history and I could learn some things about myself, but now I can really start moving forward. And it was daunting because. You know, it's pointed out to me that the entire effectiveness of this program rests on how well I will do and continue to work this third step. And that's some big stuff right there. You know, and I think what happens to people who've been around and done the work and then go back out is that maybe they're forgetting. Maybe they're trying to run their thing on their own. I don't know. I've had brief moments of that and it's hurt pretty bad. I do my best to get out of my own way. The bondage of self, man. I'm my problem. I'm selfish. I learned that the selfishness is going to kill me and that I must be rid of it. One of the many times the book talks about musts. And it also says that God helps with that. And that has been my experience, that the longer I've hung around here and been involved in service and done my best to turn my life and my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over to the care of, is that I care a lot more about other people these days. I'm not completely self-obsessed all the time. Now, still happens an awful lot. I frequently will wake up thinking about myself, and if you ever see me doing something nice for somebody, I'm thinking about myself, all right? You know, that's what I was taught to do. It was like, go out and help somebody. Get out of your own way. Fourth step scared me until I had done it, and I got the relief that it offered. I love the whole column thing. The big book lays out. It's so simple. It's not a big deal. If you're new and you haven't done it, it's not a scary thing. It's pretty simple. It's the four columns: the who, what, and the what. You know. Who am I pissed off at, and what they what it affected in me, and that kind of thing. And then the fourth column is the one thing that I never ever considered before I got here is, what's my part? What's my part? You know, and I believe that, you know, the principle behind that courage, it takes some courage for me to look at, what's my part in this? I was a victim before I got here, and I'm not a victim today. You know, I have a role in every single situation I put myself into. You know, so I shared all that with my sponsor. I did the resentment list. You know, I learned about that these things kill more of us than anything else, and I better learn to process these things, or I'm a goner. I did the fear list, and I took a good hard look at my sexual inventory, and I found out why I push people away, and why I get involved, and all this stuff. I learned an awful lot of, you know, took stock of myself, looked at the stuff I wanted to keep and the stuff I wanted to try and get rid of, and I shared it with all my sponsor, and he laughed, pissed me off, man. I'm reading him all this stuff, and I'm pouring my heart and my soul, and he's just cracking up, got tears on it. I'm like, a-hole, you know, and he's like, no, bro, I'm relating, you know, and he did exactly what the book says it does. He shared his experience with that, and I went, wow, you're really sick, man. You know, immediately I felt a little bit better, but you know, I had that huge sense of relief. It was like dropping that big old backpack of weight, and it just, oh man, and I started to feel like, wow, there's some hope for me here. That maybe, you know, that was the first real big, like, drop of all of this guilt and shame and fear and remorse that I'd just been carrying around unconsciously. And I didn't even notice it was gone until, like, I put it all out in the light. You know, so I learned about what my defects of character are, and I was taught I had to learn that seven-step prayer, and I learned the prayer, and I said the prayer, and I thought, they'll all be gone. I don't know if anybody else thought that, like, cool, I just say the prayer and they're gone. Cool, you know. I know better than that today, that's right. The stuff I get to work on for the rest of my life. But you know what? The edges have been rounded off, and I've changed, and I get to claim a little progress in all those areas. And I honestly, for me, up into this point right here this morning, there are a couple that I've asked with an awful lot of willingness that have been removed and have not come back. I was going through this period of seeing people, couples walking around, and I'm single and I'm hating couples. I see people walking on the street, I hate you guys. You guys suck, you know, look at them, oh, they're together, aren't you all happy and sweet, you know, and it's just, you know, I'm going through this, and I'm not liking the feelings behind it. I'm hating it, because it's hurting my stomach, it feels bad, it's you know, it's nasty. And one night, in utter desperation, I asked the God of my understanding for help around this. It all came up, and I could really see it clearly. Like the whole big ball of envy and self-centered fear and jealousy and all that nasty stuff. I asked God to remove it. I leaned forward and puked my guts out. I mean, this whole big knot in my stomach just kind of came out. I don't know if your God is going to make you puke up character defects. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that happened to me. This thing came out of me, and I literally felt it come out, you know, and it hasn't been there today. I see people together, I'm really happy they found somebody, that kind of thing. It's just been this huge shift in me. I don't know, God's pretty powerful. I believe that my God can do anything. It's just me that's a weak link, you know. So I made that big long list in the eighth step. I love what the book says, and I was talking about this with a friend last night about, it's so clear in that eighth step about what to look for. There's all the real big gross stuff, like, you know, I stole your TV and, you know, abused your trust. And then there's like all the real subtle things we can do. Even when we're trying to be all nice and that kind of thing and get our way and just, you know, if I'm honest with myself, it's like that list is everybody I ever met in my life, pretty much, you know. If I'm really getting down to it, it's everybody I ever met. It's really funny. I was working with a sponsee, and it was exactly the exact same thing happened to me that happened with him. And it's cool. He's like, well, I got about 30 people on the list. And I'm thinking, like, right. You know, I heard your story, man. There's more than 30 people that you burn, you know. And my sponsor did the same thing to me. And he's like, well, let's look at this again. And I was like, 2 days later, so I got 190 people now. You know, and I'm like, that's what I like. It's like getting in there and looking at the stuff and the process that this offers. And so I got the big long list, and I set out absolutely willing to make amends to any of them. I was really starting to feel the relief that the steps were offering, and I learned that the harder the amends, the bigger the payoff for me. The more I'm going to grow, the more I'm going to get out of it, and what an encouraging thing to strive for, you know. So first one I had to make, my sponsor was, he was like, why don't you start with some easy ones, just kind of get warmed up and get into it. And the next day my mom called and said, hey, we're coming into town and come visit. Oh man. And I told my sponsor, and he was like, it looks like God wants you to do the hard ones first, you know. And I was so glad that I sit up front and I pay attention to meetings. This a really good friend of mine was talking about this trap that I almost fell into, of having like three people in the room at the same time and making amends to all them at once. And he was talking about that, you know, he burned these people individually and he needed to make an individual amends. And I found myself going there, you know, wanting to just kind of do one big, like, just dope fiend, take the easy way out, shortcut, you know. Yeah, well, you know, I was wrong for doing this and that and the other, and like, cool, I just killed three birds with one stone. And I remembered what he said, and I'm forever grateful that people show up and share their experience of working the steps, you know, because when I got to that step, I remembered that here's a trap and here's the solution to it. And I didn't do that. And there's still some that I have to make, but I have the willingness to make them. God just hasn't put them in my path yet. I've had old girlfriends find my name in the phone book, like other people were talking about, and call me up. I hadn't talked to them in years, and got to clean that stuff up, you know. And pretty much everyone that I went out, I set out to clean up my side of the street, did not work out the way my brain told me it would. You know, I was filled with fear. They're going to kill me. They're going to shoot me. They're going to throw me out. I don't ever want to speak to you again. And I found the vast majority of my experience with these has been that we started talking, you know, and that people were like, we started sharing their stuff that they did as well. And we had a real healing around these relationships. And I'm really grateful for that. I love the 10th and 11th and the 12th step. That's stuff between page 84 and 88. I do not believe that for me, if I'm actually looking at that stuff on a daily basis, there's no way I cannot change. It's absolutely impossible for me to change. If I'm catching myself when I'm wrong immediately, instead of waiting until that night and like blowing the whole day, you know, if I'm looking at stuff immediately and I call another sober member and I clean that stuff up and I ask God for help around that stuff, I can't not change. You know, I cannot not change. If I'm seeking to improve my conscious contact with my God, as I understand through prayer and meditation, I'm a big believer in both of them, and I wasn't before I got here. I use meditation every once in a great while, but you know, I do it daily. Sometimes just for little short moments, sometimes I get really nice long moments of quieting my mind. And I love the word improve in that step. You know, it's pointing out to me that if I work those first 11, I'm going to have a spiritual awakening. And as a result of working those, I had one. It wasn't what I thought it would be. I thought it'd be like the big, you know, the skies part and, you know, the beams of golden light come down and angel choir, oh, and all that, you know. It was what the book talks about in the back in the appendices. It was a process that it wasn't like the big bolt. It was the educational variety, and it continues to happen to me today. And I was having a great rap with my brother Nick on the ride up about like we just get spiritual awakening. Like when I wake up in the morning, the day isn't done. I got a whole lot of stuff to do from the second I wake up, you know. So I'm awake these days, and I get to try and do the best job I can with my life. For me, it's about trying to do just the next right thing, and I'm a different human being because of it. Service has been huge for me. Got a coffee pot commitment really early on for my men's meeting, and then with all that self-centered fear and stuff like that, God pissed me off one night, and I just great plan to throw a whole bunch of LSD in the coffee pot and be the person with the most time in the room, you know, that kind of thing. I was kind of hoping for like, you know, 15 minutes left in the meeting, how the shares might be. But, you know, what I started to learn from that that this is one of the greatest gifts that this fellowship has to offer. It's a chance for me to get out of myself, start worrying about some other people, and build some self-esteem. I don't know about you guys, but like, I was resentful of myself more than anybody else combined on my four-step list. I hated myself. And I have a good, healthy love for myself today, and service has been huge, huge for me around that. I really believe in it. I try and do the best job that I can in whatever it is I'm doing. It's a special, special thing to be able to give something back to this thing that has absolutely saved and changed me. Saved my life, changed my life. And I'm always going to be in debt. Because the more I do, the more I get, the more I feel that I owe, and the more I need to go do. Vicious cycle, man. You know? So that's been a really big thing for me. So at like 6 months, I had worked all these steps. I sat in jail for a little while, 90 days of treatment. I powered through this stuff, and I got the basic simple kit of spiritual tools. Since then, I've worked them with another sponsor, and most these days I work with other guys. And every single time I take somebody through the steps, I learn something more about myself. I get a deeper and better understanding of how to apply these principles in all of my affairs, and I try and get a little bit better at doing that all the time. Being a product of H&I, I'm a big believer in H&I. I spend a lot of time doing that because it's, man, detox for me is the problem eraser, right? I'll lay on the couch Saturday afternoon, you know, I'm too tired, that pizza made me sleepy, I don't want to go, no one's going to say so, going on, and I'll just show up like the way you guys taught me, and I'll walk out of there like, I don't have a problem in the world, this is killer. You know, this guy's sitting there with their foamy slippers and their eyes going different directions, and they're shaking and sweating, and man, puts all my stuff into perspective. And every once in a while, you know, I meet somebody like 2 days, and then they see them a couple years later, and they're still continuously sober, and they've worked the steps, and they're a sponsor, and they have a sponsor, and they're sponsoring people, and it's an amazing thing. You know, I honestly believe that we have the power. We have the power through what we have been through to reach out and grab a hold of somebody who's just like on the verge of death and save their life. I honestly believe that. Because we can gain their trust when nobody else can. And we can show them how to do this stuff, and they can get in touch with the power. You know? Honestly believe that. I think it's a very, very special thing. So I don't thank anybody here who's ever done any H&I work, any of that kind of stuff. Because, you know, the seed was planted in me. Those guys back there never got to know that seed took root. You know? And I planted myself in the very fertile soil of CA. And I'm growing, man. It's good. And I got stuff that I've learned how to pull the weeds out, and they're coming up around me. And it's been a beautiful ride. And I'm looking forward to more. I'm an addict. I like more. You know? And so this shit feels good to me. I'd like some more, please. I never turn anyone down who asks me to sponsor him. Sponsored gay man, sponsor him, I don't care. I never know who's going to have the willingness. The ones that I think do, usually don't. The ones that I'm like, that guy ain't going to last a day, ends up sticking around, you know. I got a bad judger and all that kind of thing. So I never turn anybody down because I was taught that I never know who's going to stick around and how many people they might end up helping. And that you know, you can count the seeds in an apple, but you can't count the apples in the seed. And that had a big impact on me hearing that. And it's been a pleasure to watch it happen. You know, to watch fellowship grow up around me and watch people get this thing and run with it. You know, just like the book talks about. See, everything that I ever questioned in this beautiful book of ours, I have to agree with. I questioned it. I didn't believe it. And I don't question it today, and I do believe it. It's this magical, ever-changing book. Every time I read it, there's something new in there, something different in there. I'm like, that wasn't there. I've read that like 80 times. You know, I'll go through something. I'll shift. I'll grow spiritually. I'll read it, and it'll make sense to me all of a sudden. Words that just went right by, and all of a sudden something new. So I love reading it. I love the way it's written. I cannot believe that those two guys put this thing together. I honestly believe there's another power going on with that. You know, The by far and away the most important relationship for me in my life is my conscious contact with my God. That's why I'm sober. It's because I have a God. You know, it's not that like I do all this stuff. It's like I do all this stuff to stay really close to that power. You know, very little to do with me. It's like it's us and it's God. It's what I believe. It has beautified my life. It has enriched my life, and it's been like these ever widening circles. My little sister called me up one day. Do you think I am? I said, I don't know. Why don't you go to a meeting? See if you're late. And she struggled around for a little while, and she showed up here and she got sober. You know, she did the work and she got sober. And my life was not attractive before I got here. Nobody was calling me up and saying, hey, is there room in that bush? You know? And and you know, people call me all the time. You know, I put myself out there, and I get a lot of calls from old friends, and they say, you know, hey, what are you doing, man? What are you doing with your life? Because, man, you have changed. So I don't really necessarily get to see it. You know, but people that know me, I'm like, growing up, I never, ever expressed any feeling I had about anything. Ever. You know, it was like, how you doing? You know, I couldn't articulate it. I didn't want to talk to really anybody. I just kind of like to be quiet in the corner for the most part, or else like acting out like uncontrollably. You know, and I've learned, I've learned how to do my best to speak from my heart around here. I've learned how to walk into difficult situations that I don't like to be in and tell the truth. I've learned how to be compassionate for another human being here. Big stuff for me, really big stuff for me. You know, learned how to stand up in a meeting with my heart racing and sweat running down my back, my palms all clammy, and say, you know, I'm having a really rough day, and I'm scared, and it doesn't feel good, but I'm glad to be here. You know, that kind of thing. And it's by other people who are doing it before me. You know, I just, I think that this whole recovery process is like elephants. You know, I'm an old stoner. I like those nature programs, you know, and I think it's like elephants. You got the oldest elephant matriarch in front, right? And then in age, they line up right behind them. You know, and they just hold on to the tail of the one right in front of them, and they use the collective wisdom and the old age experience. And I honestly believe that's how this whole thing works. You know, it's one person following the next a little bit. You know, you're a little farther down the path. How do I get to where you're at? You know, and hey, bro, come on. I can tell you how to get right here. You know, and that kind of thing. It's a very special, it's a wonderful, it's a beautiful thing. I feel honored and privileged to be part of this. You know, it's truly a blessing in my life. I want to thank each and every person for being here. I've had a wonderful time getting to know you guys and deepening some already existing friendships. It's been a wonderful, beautiful experience this weekend. It's been a wonderful, beautiful experience getting and staying sober, even though the first part was so unbelievably uncomfortable. It's a lot better now. So if you're new, if you're fairly new, working the steps is like putting brand new tires on a car that ain't got new tires. That's what I was taught. You can get from one place to the next if you're just not taking nothing. But if you work the steps, it's going to be a lot more comfortable ride, a lot smoother. I'm going to handle corners a lot better. You know, bad weather can come. It's not a big, it doesn't totally affect you. This thing really works. It's, my opinion, this goes way beyond just not taking something. I really believe that this is a program for living. This is designed for living. And that it works. And there's just so much evidence of that right here and out there in the world. You know, this is a... I believe that God got tired of watching us die and put something down for us to recover. And it's been sweeping the world for a few decades now. I feel honored to be part of it. I feel honored to be able to speak here today. Thank you. God bless you.